Blog Talk Radio.
Finally, I'm finally free. Finally, I'm finally me. Finally, I'm finally free.
Podcast. My name is Jamie. I am your host. Tonight is Scandal Night, well, pre-scandal night anyway. We are going to be talking about all things related to the hottest show on prime time, the hottest show that is talked about on Twitter, ABC's Scandal, starring Kerry Washington and created by the great Shonda Rhimes. I have a couple of guests that will be with us on this show and amazing co-hosts. Our guests today are Makisha Madden-Toby, who should be calling in shortly, and also we have on the call right now Tangela Eckhoff, who is a social TV strategist and comedian who is followed by a plethora of Scandal fans. So she'll talk to us about Scandal, and it's going to be very laid back. We're just going chat about all of the things that we love about the show and just ask each other questions and answer about things that we either think are going to be happening in Season 3 or things that we'd like to happen in Season 3 and so on. So if you do want to engage with us, please do. Our number to call is 347-237-4616. And you can talk to us via Twitter and use the hashtag BGN Podcast. Just one quick announcement, and then we're going to move on to talking about Scandal and also introduce our co-host. If you haven't done so already, I always like to plug this in because it's very important. It keeps this show going. It keeps us healthy and allows each of these shows to continue from week to week. If you go to Zazzle.com, www.zazzle.com/blurredgasm, there are merchandise that is available in our store. So we've got a lot of merchandise from mugs to T-shirts. I think we've got some keychains in there, mouse pads, various products that have the Black Girl Nerds logo on it. And all of the funds that go into that store help these podcasts going. So we certainly appreciate your support. Thank you to those who have already purchased items in the store. And please continue to tweet us your photographs and show off your Black Girl Nerds gear. So before we get started, I want to throw the virtual mic over to my lovely co-hosts. We have LaTanya and Ashley with us. We have two other co-hosts that are coming in. They might be running a little late, but LaTanya and Ashley, in that order, go ahead and introduce yourselves and let us know what's going on, anything current, social media shout-outs. You know the drill.
Well, hey, it's LaTanya. I have a blog over on sprinklesandbooze.com. All my social media links are actually on my homepage, so if you want to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of that good stuff, you can follow. You just click on the link and follow me there. I went to a fair today and ate a lot of stuff, so that's my current situation. I'm stuffed full of, like, fried Oreos and fries and deliciousness, so that's it, please. That's the current happening. So I guess that's it.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I have a website called quirksandsplatters.com. I'm basically a horror academic nerd, and I really, really love Scandal.
As all of us do. And there's something wrong with you if you don't like Scandal. I'm just saying. I'm kidding. We have someone who's calling in. It might be our guest. So I'm going to bring them on the line here. Area code 313, you're on the air with Black Girl Nerds.
Hey, it's Makisha.
Hey, Makisha. How's it going?
Good, good. Sorry for the delay. It's crazy traffic in L.A. But I'm here. I want to talk. I'm ready to talk about Scandal. Yay.
Yay. Okay, well. So I will get started and introduce our guests. And, yeah, we'll get started on Scandal. So Makisha Madden-Toby is a critical writer, reporter, and blogger for MSN-TV and is based in L.A. She's written articles on Scandal and has also contributed a few of her pieces right here on the Black Girl Nerds website. We also have Tangela Eckhoff. She is a writer, speaker, and sit-down comic, TV recapper, and social TV strategist. She is a hardcore gladiator who has a large Scandal social media follow base, and she tweets incessantly with the Scandal cast members, so she's our resident expert as well. Thank you for coming on the show, guys.
Thank you.
You love that.
I wasn't expecting awesome. That. That's awesome.
So, I want, first, before we get started on talking about Scandal, why don't, we'll start with Tangela and then Makisha. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves and what got you into Scandal?
Oh, okay. I'm a wife, a mom, and I've spent 13 years clawing and scraping and trying to build a stand-up comedy career, and through the comedy gods started doing YouTube videos about Scandal recaps and didn't think anything was happening because I didn't understand the analytics, and then things started taking off and I started having to learn fairly quickly that this was really huge. I started watching the show from the very beginning because the buy-in for me was Shonda Rhimes created it, so I knew I was going to love it. I knew there were going to be characters that that looked like me in the brown sense, people that were diverse, and that it was going to be, I mean, of course, I look nothing like Kerry Washington, but the fact that I knew that black and brown people were going to be cast and that it was going to be this really diverse kind of casting on the show, and I was hooked from the very beginning, and I started watching from season three and not live tweeting the show in season one. I mean, I started watching season one, but I didn't start live tweeting in season one. I would tweet like after the fact because my computer, I had a desktop that was upstairs where my office was upstairs and my big TV was downstairs, and I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't huff. I couldn't rally. And I wasn't dedicated enough to rally like that. But season two, I started live tweeting, and then everything just kind of started blowing up for me career-wise and fan-wise. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the show, so it's been amazing and funny and fun and interesting.
That's so cool.
Awesome. Yes. Makisha, how about you?
Oh, it's funny. I remember reviewing the pilot episode and not being blown away. I was excited about the concept of the show and was kind of disappointed in the pilot, but the show got better and stronger, in my opinion, from the pilot on. And by the end of the first season, I was like, okay, I see where this is going now, and I kind of like it. And then season two, they really won me over. So I think I was more than anything, I was just really drawn to the relationship between Olivia and Fitz, and sort of, you know, all of the sort of the social underpinnings and the racial underpinnings and the political and all that other stuff. I was really intrigued how Shonda was going to handle that. And though I'm sure we'll get into this later on, I don't really, I was a little disappointed with the finale for season two because of that reason. I just kind of wanted a different ending, but we'll get into that later. But I'm drawn completely and obsessively to that sort of that discussion surrounding that, people's obsession with it, how black people in particular tweet about it, how they look at it. Like, to me, even though the show is so deliciously absurd, I mean, that is one set of things. Like, that's by in of itself, the show is awesome. But to me, the bigger thing for me is, like, just how much people are drawn to the show and how much people talk about the show and how many conversations and how much dialogue it conjures up. And that just fascinates me because I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's ever been a show like that that has created that much social media buzz, racial, you know, political, you know, sort of gender-based conversations amongst people, and specifically amongst career-oriented blacks. So it's just, I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by the audience that it attracts. I'm fascinated by the conversation that sort of started because of the show and has continued because of the show, and I'm thoroughly impressed and proud of Shonda Rhimes and of Kerry Washington and Jane Smith, who inspired the show, because that this is history. I mean, even though we don't necessarily maybe look at it that way on a daily, just watching the show and enjoying the show, it's just the history that's being made, like, just with that show and just being in existence. It's insane to me a nighttime soap could have that kind of impact, but it does.
Well, if I can just interject here, being a black woman from, I grew up in Alabama, coming from the place that I grew up in, seeing Kerry Washington on screen in this three-dimensional role instead of, like, she's five-fifths of a woman, as flawed and jacked up as Olivia can get in some of the things that she does, but seeing a whole woman instead of the black best friend, seeing this woman who,
yes,
you know, has total agency over her sexuality and, more importantly, has a bit of a dominant trait over the most powerful man on the planet who happens to be white, Now, you couple that with the fact that I am in an interracial marriage myself. My husband's white, and then, you know, we can watch it together and go, oh, there we are on network TV. You know, even though they're in an adulterous affair, and it's all cheating and skeevy, but you know, we get to see that sort of reflection where you see this black woman wanted by this white man. And I think what's so funny is it stirs up these emotions with a lot of the fans, and I think that's why they're totally invested. A lot of them are totally invested too, because it became this. Once Olivia and Fitz, especially from episode one, the Sweet Baby, that episode when the big kiss in the White House, became this moment where you could almost collectively hear black women saying, "We can do that." Not that we haven't thought it, and not that we don't discuss it amongst our girlfriends, but suddenly it was out there, validated on network television, and it was almost like this collective, really.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of that has to do with, you know, over the past few years, you know, all of these black women articles about how we and that we'll never get married, this and that, blah blah blah. Do you think it, the base of that, a lot of the lingering feelings that are shared amongst black women is that we don't feel valued in this society physically and mentally? Do you think that plays a role?
I think it does, and that's just the minor in sociology that I have and the observant older woman that I am. I think that it does. I think that there is a sense that we are not allowed to own our own sexuality without having some sort of epithet hurled at us. If we look a certain way, we're a mammy and we're obviously asexual, which is hysterical to me because I get my swerve on often and early. You know, if you happen to be chubby, then you've got to be the mammy. I think that there is this lack of value for us, and I think that this obsession with the show may come from that. Yes, people may not want to admit to it, but
right.
We may be putting air in people's business right now, but I do think that that's a lot of it, and I do think that's a lot of it with the fans that are very, very passionate about it and very, very passionate about Olivia and Fitz being together. I think that may be where that comes from, because keep in mind that we went through a whole series. We went through like 6 or 7 years where it was, you ain't ever getting married. You can get, you know, you've got a better chance of winning the Powerball, seeing Bigfoot, and having a plane crash in your house than you have of getting married if you're a black woman.
Well,
with a degree.
I agree, and I see what you mean in terms of people's passion for it and stuff. But that if you look at it like that, I can't look at it like that because she's not married to him.
No, she's not married to him. Having a relationship.
No,
period.
I know. In terms of having a relationship, yes, and having and being looked at as a desirable woman and person,
yes.
People have been waiting for that, specifically from Shonda Rhimes. And not to put all the pressure on her, but she is one of the few African-American women in that powerful position. And when you look at a show like Grey's Anatomy, where you had Dr. Bailey, who was chubby, is chubby, and is asexual, it's amazing contrast. Look at Dr. Bailey and look at Olivia and how different they are. And people have been waiting for Shonda Rhimes to do it. And I know, like I said, that's a lot of pressure to put on one person. But that's a fact. People were like, okay, you know what? You're never gonna let Bailey be that person. You're never going to let her be sexual. She even had a husband. And you never even saw him kiss, I don't think. Maybe once. But, like, it was just sort of like it was disappointing, to say the least, that there was never an African-American woman on Grey's Anatomy with that same sort of sexuality, with that same sort of liberation, and with that same sort of, you know, ability to say, yes, I am a woman and I'm professional and I'm educated, but I'm also a sexual creature. Never.
Mm-hmm.
Not on Grey's Anatomy. So it was amazing to see her take a complete 180 with Scandal and do that and give that. But also notice the way, you know, the two actresses look. You know, blanking on her last name, who plays Dr.
Wilson.
Bailey. Shonda Rhimes, I think so. Thank you. And Kerry Washington are very different physical, have very different physical makeups. So you wonder, like, the next frontier for Shonda Rhimes, or whoever, I won't even put it just on Shonda, the next frontier for someone in that position of power to put a black woman in the lead needs to put a chubby black woman in the lead and show her as sexual as well. I'm serious.
But I think that goes, you know what, and I don't want to throw things off the rail here, but I think that this opens up a door for creators who are out there, who are content creators, whether you're doing it on YouTube and you're creating a web series or you're trying to produce your own small show or whatever, it opens the door for people to actually do that and make that happen.
Or it opens the door for Shonda Rhimes to give Bailey a sex life. It's not too late.
Yeah,
right?
And then there's that, but I'm not going to tell Shonda to do anything because if you suggest that, then Shonda's going to do the opposite.
So. Bailey has a sex life, though. She had, you know, a couple of relationships on that show. So,
right. But, I mean, that's one of the horniest, randiest shows, and she is probably the most chaste person in that hospital.
Yeah, but she was also the Nazi from the very beginning. You know, her whole demeanor from the very beginning was being strict.
She was tough black lady boss, right.
Yeah, like the boss, and you only pigeonhole the boss as being one thing. Like, you didn't see Danny Glover as sexual in Lethal Weapon either. So, I mean, I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying. You know, when writers...
I don't want to see
do you want to? You want that image again? Danny
no,
Glover.
I don't want that. I saw him in Beloved, and I was like, whoa, that's way too much Danny Glover for my eyes.
I know that's right. No more Danny Glover.
No more.
Yeah, but I think that it just opens it up for people who are creating shows to start thinking about these things. And as Hollywood progresses, and now the barrier to entry, thanks to YouTube and people doing things on Vimeo and crowdfunding and stuff, the barrier to entry is lower now, so maybe people can get in and tell more realistic stories. I don't want to put all that pressure on Shonda on the one hand. I mean, on the one hand, I don't want to, but at the same time, it's like, can a chubby girl get some love? Because everybody
that's
has a
all
whole
I'm saying.
Like,
that's all I'm saying. Give some chubby girls some love. That's all.
But I feel you. I totally feel you. Because
as black women, we come in so many different shapes and sizes, and a lot of us are not built like Carrie. God bless Carrie. She's beautiful and tiny. But everybody doesn't look beautiful and tiny.
And there are lots of beautiful, tiny, skinny women who don't have a partner.
That's true.
Right.
Well, shameless plug, if you go to blackgirlnerds.com, there's a post that was actually written by one of our contributors about that topic called Worthy of Love, Plus Size, African-American Women in Film and TV. So check that piece out because, yeah, we're all about seeing women of color in all sizes being
and Shonda is a plus size woman. That's all I'm saying. I mean, Shonda is a plus size woman. That's you would
listen, honey. All I'm waiting is for one of these ideas of mine to catch on so that I can get on, and there will be plus size women in love.
It's
going to
happen. I can tell. You are a driven woman. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
let's start talking about some enders with season two. Season two ended. Olivia Pope meeting her father, Rowan, who we now know was working with Jake to do intel on Olivia. Do you think Rowan has it out for his daughter? What do you believe his motives are at this point? We'll start with Angela and Keisha.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to. I'm sorry. That finale, I was feeling some kind of way, as my mama would say, about it. the last 5 minutes with Fitz's head in Melly's lap, I was done. I was like, get your head up, boy. I was done. I think that Rowan, what we're going to find out is that Fitz is also B613.
What?
And Rowan is trying to protect his daughter from a potential killer because it's not bad enough that Fitz killed Verna. We're going to have to find out that he probably, like, killed children in war that were innocent or something. So I think he may be trying to protect his daughter from another B613 killer. So that's what I think the skinny is on all that. That's just my take.
Makisha?
I think her father hates her. It's something weird going on because, I mean, if you think about the way the season two is set up and you're just like, what is this dude at the grind? Why is he so obsessed with her? I mean, obviously we know now. But to some extent you'd have to say, so then he tried to kill her? Like,
yeah.
And then he saved her? Like, or is that his thing? Does he, like, put her in situations to see... You know what I'm saying? Like, what was that movie, Orlando? There's this movie that there's sort of like this crazy assassin child who was a robot or something. Like, it's like he's created this monster, so to speak. I mean, like, she's not a monster, but he created her to be one. And when she doesn't rise to the occasion of being a monster that he wants, that he created it to some extent. Or maybe she has risen to become the monster he thought he had avoided. Or there's some hatred there. I mean,
well,
I want you to make
some
things.
Some sort of weirdness because the sex tape alone, like, who's daddy
like,
does
that?
Yeah.
As a parent, and to Angela can back me up on this. I don't ever want to think, I mean, my daughter will grow up one day and give me grandchildren, and I will still say that she's a virgin.
My daughter's 25 with a boyfriend.
So,
and as far as I'm concerned,
right.
They sit on the sofa and eat pretzels. I don't want to know.
Thank you. So, right. So, what you talking about with this sex? What you talking about with sending assassins? Like, you hate her, and then you saved her? Like, it's going to be fascinating. I'm telling you, season 3 is going to be fascinating. Just their dynamic alone, explaining that, what is going on, what is his motivation, you know, how does he feel about her? Is it love, hate? Is it hate? You know, I can't wait to see. But, yeah, and to quick, you know, short answer, fastest, Jamie, I would have to say I think he hates her. He hates her. And we don't know why. But there can't be a lot of love.
It could be, like, some weird underlining jealousy, too, somewhere. Like, that.
Right, maybe she can do what he
can
do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's deep.
But it's definitely hate, but it's probably, like, it's something that's going to be,
There's a psychological study, like, right, about fathers and sons that says that there's a love of that the father feels for his son, but there's also this regret that
if
you put too much into your son, he will surpass you. Inevitably, that is what's going to happen. And it's fascinating because we've never seen that on television with fathers and daughters. But what's to say that that's not part of it?
Yeah, and she's, like, a very strong, like, female, you know. She's
a
very
player. Yeah.
She's a boss. So it's like he probably has, like, some jealousy towards her.
Yeah, or maybe he wanted her to be a boy or something. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? This is
yeah.
I think we're going to see an extremely layered relationship. You obviously notice how good she is at strategizing and cover-ups and things like that, and I think a lot of that has to do with – I think her home life and her family life as she grew up is probably going to play a big role in it and her relationship with her father. So,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The total absentee father in a way that I didn't think, like originally when I did a recap, it just kind of flew off the top of my head and out of my mouth that, you know, she's got some serious daddy issues. And I would assume, and I was trying to assume that it would be one of those, you know, absentee father in prison. But, you know, why not? Your dad's head of a CIA agency, an undercover secret CIA agency. He's gone all the time and he's killing people. So it's the same damn
absentee
thing.
Absentee. Right.
So, yeah, I think that's going to be explored.
Well, we've got a caller on the line that wants to talk to us, so I'll bring in
cool.
Area code 661. You're on the air with Black Girl Nerds. What's your name and where are you from?
Hey, it's Joe Nickbone. I talked to you guys a few weeks ago. How you doing?
Hey, Joe. How's it going? Good.
Hey. Yeah, I was listening to you a few minutes ago, and you were talking about, like, body type images and roles, but, you know, one of the things that I think we had touched on a few weeks ago is, you know, I think instead of body images and having diversified body images, diversified roles themselves. Because after that show, I went and did a little researching, and Black women were the first ones to depict themselves as action heroes in movies. Prior to the 70s, there were no female action heroes. So Pam Grier and that whole crowd broke the mold.
Right.
But then something happened. You know, something happened and everything kind of changed. So, you know, as opposed to body types, you know, I would like to see more diversity of the roles themselves. Olivia Pope is a great character, but what happens is it creates more Olivia Popes as opposed to other types of characters.
That's true.
And
so
you know, I would love to see Black women take back that title of action hero, female action hero that they once held in the 70s. You hold Pam Grier in such high regard because of those roles.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
That is true. We definitely need that. I think it's I think Scandal is going to open the door, and that's one of my questions later on. I really feel like it is going to open the door for more Black women to be represented as protagonists, as leads in primetime shows and shows in general. So I really hope that, you know, that's going to be a trend.
Well, it started, right? I mean, like, I think the nice thing about, well, it was short-lived with Deception.
Yeah.
People really comparing.
For good
Scandal
reason, though, because that show was some hot mess.
but
you know what,
it seemed like that show sealed its own fate when fans were comparing it to it, obviously, because the female lead was with a white protagonist character as well. But it just bothered me that a lot of fans were comparing Scandal to Deception. So it was already at a bad start when that show premiered.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, true, but I mean, I don't think it was. I don't think it was coincidental. I think also too that NBC saw that Scandal was such a hit for ABC and said we want some of that.
And,
yeah.
Well, and they moved it up.
They stepped it up without a good premise or a better actress or any of that other stuff that you need for a show to survive.
But the other thing that they did that was extremely crazy to me as a Scandal fan and also dealing in social television and dealing with Twitter, the fact that they didn't have the sense to migrate the Scandal audience that was already on Twitter. The fact that they didn't go looking for who was talking about Scandal and NBC didn't become buddy-buddy with them. Dumb. Dumb business.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I'm waiting for a female role that's as complex as, let's say, like Batman. Because Batman, you know, that character has so many depths to it, you know, and can be written so many different ways. And we always sell, you know, our ladies short by not giving them that level of depth. Now, Olivia Pope approaches that, but she's not all the way there yet. And
Michonne,
you know,
is pretty good. I like Michonne.
Yeah.
She's pretty Batman-ish.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, you know, so, you know, I mean, she could carry that show
She's supposed to get her squirrel on with either Rick or Daryl this season, so I think we're going to see a lot more from Michonne. That's all.
I wrote a blog post about it. I'm down for Michonne. Rick and Michonne, I want that to happen.
I want that. Yes, me too.
No,
yeah.
I wanted to get back
they had
to
a moment
Ken
when
Rob.
They went to the town. I want some more of that moment.
Yes.
But we are,
get
you know, Sleepy Hollow has jumped off, and there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I
yeah.
love that show. And I don't know how the romance angle of it is going to shake out, and I don't really care at this point. I love that Abby's strong and vulnerable at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would love to see more characters that have those layers of depth as opposed to one-note ponies like, you know, Mothers or, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean,
that's
we already know.
Friend.
Yeah, yeah, you know, the happy black magical best friend that always gives great advice to the troubled, you know, whoever. You know, I'm tired of those roles. I want to see some depth there. I want to see a female version of the Punisher. Now, I don't think, you know, society is ready for. You know, a woman that's pissed off enough, like Jodie Foster did The Brave One, and it was a good movie. It was a little scary, but could you imagine a black female in that role? Could you imagine what people would say about that? So, you know, I want to see people take more risks in that regard.
Well, Joe, I mean, it's not just with African-American actresses, though. I feel that way about actors, too. I mean, like, you watch a show like New Girl, I'm so disappointed every week, and I know it's probably a dead horse that I'm beating every week, but come on, you're going to make Winston... They make him so one-dimensional. It's so sad. It's like you don't have anything going on. You don't have anything.
Exactly.
I mean, like, you're just, seriously, everything is just happening around you.
He is
the
complete comic relief.
Seriously, it's like last week they gave him a cat, and the week before that, I think they had him, like, in puzzles and taking his clothes off while playing with a puzzle. I'm serious. I like that show, but I'm about done with that show. I'm going to take it off the DVR. Season pass if they don't quit playing and like give him something other than like this horrible storyline. It's like no life, and he's just a spoil to everybody else. I mean, how much black best friend can you give him? And I know they're supposed to be bringing Damon Wayans Jr. on the show, so it'll be two black best friends. So maybe they'll become one. I don't know what's gonna happen, but they gotta do something. It's really frustrating.
I'm impressed with Common though on The Hell on Wheels. But again,
oh,
you know, what's missing is a black female role in that, and you know, I think that would round out that show quite a bit to have a strong black female role to take to, you know, to either work with or work beside Common, because he's really coming on strong in what's basically a supporting role. He's really coming on strong and turning
Saturday
into
Night. He was incredible.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Yes, he was. So, you know, so stuff like that. You know, I want to see more diversity. I just hate that TV and movies tend to clone as opposed to innovate. And when one show does well, then you get a million clones of it that really don't. And they do this formula time after time after time, and it makes me wonder, what the hell are you guys thinking there? You know?
Yeah.
So, you know.
But
anyway,
you got Mistresses, you got Betrayal, you got all, I mean, it's the same trope. Yeah, you're right. And it's not just the black end of it. It's like all of Hollywood. They look at, well, okay, well, this one's done well. Let's just duplicate it. And that's what I think that that's what they sit in meetings and do.
Well, it's two tragic words.
Devious maids.
Devious maids.
Oh, God. Yeah. That was a disappointment. But, I mean, look at the funny thing about mistresses, and that's where diversity sort of takes, where you're just like, okay, there's diversity for the good, for the betterment of television, for the audience, for the viewers that are watching it, right? And then there's a diversity that's just sort of haphazard and backward, where you have, like, Jason George on Mistresses, and everybody's like, well, you know, I guess we should she check the paternity test, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, no, you could actually just wait and have them, because when you had a baby, there's no doubt who, you know, who the father's going to be if the child comes out brown, and no one has addressed that. I'm like, hello? No, I mean,
but
like,
that goes to the larger
so
issue of
not
having people of color in the writer's room.
Right.
You're not
going
to even acknowledge that the child, if the child comes out Coco Brown, that you know who the father is. Like, come on. Like,
driving
crazy.
Yeah,
well, John,
go ahead. Yeah, just one last question. Hey, have you guys ever heard from Reggie Bollywood that used to write for New York Undercover? Because he and his wife were writers, but I haven't heard anything from them in a really long time.
I don't know.
No, not since Love and Basketball, sadly enough. I don't know what they're both doing nowadays.
Yeah, they were great writers, you know, and I would love to see more stuff from them, but, yeah, you know.
Yeah,
I
mean, you don't make me Google
them,
but you know what? It's so strange. They probably are working. You never really know sometimes the writers are working.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, even when the game was canceled, Mara Brock-Akil was even doing stuff on Cougar Town, and people don't really know that, but that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, sometimes people, like, they'll take consulting roles, and they don't even have writing credit, but they're part of a show, so...
Yep,
they're probably working somewhere. I'm going to Google them after the show for sure and see what happens, and then I'm sure you will too.
Yeah, but anyway, thanks for letting me call in, ladies, and I'm enjoying the conversation.
Thank you.
Right, goodbye. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye. All righty. So we've got a couple of people in the chat that's asking some questions about Rowan's mom. It's been rumored that Debbie Allen may play her.
Olivia's mom.
Olivia's mom.
Olivia's mom. I'm sorry. Olivia's mom.
I'm like, grandma? You mean her grandma?
Yeah, that's the same.
Rowan's mom. Whoa, that really good. Okay. I thought you were like, it's going to be nice, Carol.
Where's Ruby D?
Olivia's mom. First of all, is that true? And if not, who would you have in mind to play Olivia's mom?
I don't think that that's true because she's on Grey's right now, but the fandom has been just really excited and pushing towards Linda Lowry, the casting director of Scandal, asking her if Felicia Rashad could play Olivia's mother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, so I don't know, but, you know, Shonda may go left and, like, have her mama be white or something. You just never know.
Or Latino.
Or Latino or something. You know, you just never know. So, but it would be nice to see Felicia Rashad.
Who else would be a good mom? That's a good question. I'm trying to think. Felicia Rashad would be good, but there's somebody else I'm thinking.
Pam Grier would be awesome.
She would be good.
She would be good. She's sassy and she's strong and I don't say sassy in that demeaning way, but in that just, you know, in her just her whole demeanor is, I got this and I'm not having any of your, you know. So
yeah.
I think that Pam Grier would be
Lynetta McGee, is that her name?
Lynetta McGee. Oh yeah, that was on In the Heat of the Night.
That would be a good one.
Yeah,
you know.
Carrie and Diane look good on stage together. Diane Carroll.
Lynn
Whitfield.
I think they look great together.
Oh, yeah. Stop it.
They did look great together, though.
You said Rowan's mom. She could be Rowan's mom.
She could be Rowan's mom, couldn't she?
She could be Rowan's mom.
Yeah, but Lynn Whitfield,
go ahead.
How refined she is, and, you know, yeah, that would be a good one, too.
Leslie Mack.
They were great
Twitter
together on the image. It was disappointing. It
didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on season two, we also had an ender with Jake. He was left in a holding cell. What's to become of Jake?
He's going to get hairy and funky.
Yeah, and I'm sure they have a purpose for him. I mean, I don't think that he's going to go the way of Huck and he's going to be homeless.
Nah.
I mean, I guess it depends on how long they keep him in the hole. But I think they have the job in mind or something in mind for him.
Yeah, I have
back,
no idea
so.
What. Oh, yeah, he's a regular now. So
he's
there.
Promoted.
And Shonda Rhimes loves him, like has loved him since he was Noel in Felicity. So he's there. I have no idea what he's gonna do. But I'm a total elite shipper, so, you know, if I had my way, he'd just stay there in that hole. But I know he's got to get out and cause trouble.
That's his job. I mean, that's the purpose of his character.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's going to be fun.
Also, another season ender was with Fitz. He ends up with the tail between his legs and reluctantly goes back to Millie. Is Olitz over, or is this just another breakup to make up?
No, I think it's just another breakup to make up.
I agree. Yeah, it has to be, because that's the sort of the heart of the show.
Well, yeah, it's the heart of the marketing of the show, for sure. I don't,
yeah.
I mean, you know, ABC, everything that they put out is like, it's the Olivia and Fitz, it's them, you know, at Good Morning America, it's them. So, yeah, I don't think that Olivia and Fitz are absolutely over. I don't think they'll ever be over because they are, it is true love always, even though he's married. but I do think that there is going to be, you know, you can't have it all in season three. You know, if you get a couple together in season three of a show, it invariably fails season four. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think that there's, it's going to be fun to see, you know, because Shonda didn't put them together at the end of the season finale for season two, which was, you know, sort of disappointing to people like me.
Oh,
I think that it'll be fun to see what she does to bring them back together. The thing about that is there won't be another moment where, you know, you hear Tammy and Marvin singing "You're All I Need" to keep you alive, and he says, let me earn you, girl, let me earn you. You know, there won't be any more "let me earn you" moments. But maybe she'll say that to him. Like, maybe, who knows? It's just going to be cool. I mean, I am actually looking forward to that in season three, seeing how they do get back together. Because the will they or won't they is what keeps shows, not just this show, a lot of shows alive. And it's the when they do get together, how does that work and what does that look like and how do they get back together and, you know.
Sorry.
It's part of the fun.
Yeah. I don't know how she's going to put them back together again because she totally burned the house down. You know, the last episode just burned down every ounce of goodwill that Tony Goldwyn had directed in episode 220, the Earn Me speech and the sitting on the couch and just let me earn you and let's run this clock out. And it was like that him putting his head in the lap just, you know, totally blew that to smithereens. So I have no idea how she's going to get them back together and if there will be any, if there will even be any movement toward them being back together. I was really happy to see the sneak peek the other day where they're actually down in the bunker, even though Olivia used her, like, DEFCON zombie attack, the world's going to end code, and she can never get another one. to see him, so I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. But they're so magnetic together on screen, it would be a travesty if they don't get to interact with each other this season. It would be a travesty.
Yeah, it would be. And but I'm hoping to avoid horrible lines like he had in season two, like, my erection will not tell me what to do. I will not be controlled by my erection or whatever.
Yes, you're
like,
totally controlled by your erection, boo.
What is he, what? All right. Didn't you just do it in the closet? Like, I was like, what is erection, man? So that line should have been deleted. But I'm hoping in season three he won't say it. He won't make a reference to his erection ever again. I'm going to need him not to say that. But everything else I thought was. I mean, that was a steamy, hot, extra special sauce.
Woo,
love scene.
Honey.
Yeah.
But like I said, for him to be like, I'm done. My erection won't tell me what to do anymore. I'm like, okay, bro.
Yeah, and you see, they're like, okay, did she actually put her panties back on or did you put them in your pocket for you?
Right.
Yeah, that scene was out off the chain. That wall flame she did, she slapped the wall. I was like, oh, okay,
right.
That's how you young
no
people
servers
do it.
In that room were like,
like
and
now every time
scene.
I pass by like a server room, I'm like side-eyeing, wondering who's in there.
I know, like, who's that smell? Hmm. Exactly. So, yeah, no need to give your speech about erection, sir. We saw that scene. We know what's up.
I want to move to race, gender, and culture with Scandal. How does race, power, and gender factor into the relationships between Olets, Olake, and Melitz?
That's a loaded
I love portmanteaus, by the way, just saying.
I think that the dynamic, I think that at first Melly was supposed to be Southern because Bellamy Young is Southern and her accent comes out and you can hear it, but they turned it into some sort of blue blood from Boston, and then there have been some allusion to her family being the, you know, former slave owners. In that way, the fact that they don't directly address race in some ways makes me very happy. In other ways, I'm like, yeah, but you can't just get away without doing it. You know,
right.
The Sally Hemming, Thomas Jefferson sang speech
mm-hmm.
that Olivia gave, and then him in the Rose Garden talking about it. And then at the finale, this huge thing about how Melly's racism could be trotted out on the street if she doesn't go along with him and Olivia being together. Mm-hmm. I think that they play it smart in the way that they deal with race. I do think that gender-wise, you see, like if you look at Melly's character, she's constantly braying on about, you know, having given up her career to have these children, and you hear all of this and you think, yeah, she has given up a lot, but she gained a lot by being the first lady.
Right.
You know, she gained
right.
a lot. That's a lot of power. I don't care how you slice that. And I think that the way that they deal with the dynamic is really interesting in the fact that they almost passively deal with it. They almost don't deal with it unless they have to. And I think
right.
that's refreshing instead of it being every week, but I'm with you because you're white, and I love you, my chocolate bunny. No, I love you, my white boo. No, come here, mocha goddess. You know, I mean, that would just make me sick to my stomach if that's what it
right.
was all about. I do mm-hmm. like that it is colorblind with the sense of Olivia being at the helm of these really flawed gladiators who circumvent the law and do all sorts of illegal things to cover up people's crimes, but she's the head and she's the mama in that role with these very flawed children. That scene when they brought Huck back after he had been beaten and held captive, you know, after they thought he shot the president, and they're there, and I'm seeing that scene where they're eating dinner, and he comes in, and it's just like a family. They're the children, and there's Olivia as the mom, and I don't think in a racially in that racial sense of the black woman as nurturer saying, I think more in that sense of just as she took in all these flawed individuals, she's just as flawed as they are, but they turn to her for knowledge, for expertise, for, you know, anything. But Olivia has no friends. I think that's the one problem I have with the show. She has no female friends to bounce any of this mess off of. What sister out there has no one she can confide in, period, about anything? I mean, that just that she's this island, that kind of I find a little bit disturbing, except her best friend is Cyrus, who's constantly trying to have her killed, and then showing up to do his, you know, they're doing toes and eating popcorn.
But I think there's something, well, I think Huck is kind of her best friend, right? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's
a
weird dynamic.
In terms of, like, she gets her hair done somewhere. Where is she getting her hair
who
done?
Who does her hair?
To?
Who cleans her apartment? Because you know Olivia cleans her apartment.
Painting her nails, right. She's talking to somebody. We just don't see it. We just have to assume
yeah,
that because
right.
her hair is tight. But we was tight.
Sounds
the nails are right.
Who does her hair.
We was tight. The nails are right. That she's talking to somebody, right? But, I mean, do you have to see it to know that? I don't know. But, I mean, I know what you mean. She's not an island. But
right.
Yeah. It would be nice every once in a while to see her laugh and kick back, but she can't.
Wouldn't
I mean,
be
to
nice.
Some extent, too, the other side of that is in that job, it's not like that's an everyday 9-to-5 bank job.
This is true.
So she can only talk to some people. You know what I'm saying? Like, who would you even confide in those situations? And people
Cyrus.
Who are in the trenches with you. Right, who are also doing it. Right, Cyrus, because he's is just equally as dirty and just equally as, you know, sort of cunning. So I think to some extent that
that would be interesting to see if she'd ever, if she would ever have a female equal. She doesn't on the show. She doesn't have any female, because Melly is not her equal.
Oh, God,
She's above Melly. So I mean, who is her female equal? Who will be the female equivalent? Cyrus is gay. It's not the same, but I guess that's the closest she would have to having that relationship, I think. I think to some extent that that's sort of an occupational hazard, that you can't really be besties with people and be Olivia.
Yeah.
Like your dad is trying to kill you. Who are you going to talk to? You know, you're going to tell your hairdresser that? So I think.
Yeah. Girl, my daddy was just trying to kill me. Can you do something with these kids?
Girl, my daddy just trying to kill me. I'm mad. You know, I'm like, no, that's not something you can relate to your hairdresser.
Girl, I went through the tunnel. I went to the tunnel to the White House to see my boo. Girl.
I know. Girl, I know, I was just at Whole Foods. Not the same. So her universe of besties, I'm guessing, would be kind of small in real life, in any way. So, but yeah, it would be nice to see her sort of, you know, where is she getting all of the fine things in her apartment come from somewhere? Unless somebody is just coming, like people, she just calls people when they come and they bring furniture. And she calls her hairdresser and they come and do her hair and her nails and stuff like that. She operates somehow. So she shops somewhere. Maybe or she has a buyer. Or she has the
fairies. They're fairies.
Yeah.
They're furniture fairies.
The people in her office do it. I don't know. But somebody is helping her out. So, yeah, it would be nice to see some of that. But not too much of that. Because, like I said, the fun, too, is of watching that show is sort of the fantasy of it, right?
Right.
Mystery. That they don't. Right. The mystery, the fantasy, the avoidance to some extent. Like, we don't have to talk about the fact that, too much at least, that he's white and she's black. We don't have to talk about too much of the fact that he's married and that she's his mistress, and you know, I mean, that all that plays a part, but it's not like you said, it's not, it doesn't, they don't beat you over the head with it, because in to a certain extent that would get in the way of the fantasy of the enjoyment of them being whatever their position in life. Him, of course, being the most powerful man in the world, and her, you know, being a professional fixer, they're soulmates. So that soulmate core, I think, eclipses everything else, and including reality, the reality of race, the reality of gender, the reality of politics, the reality of gender politics, the reality of racial politics, all that stuff that we deal with and don't deal with in day-to-day life, they don't have to deal with, because to a certain extent, they've been playing this, they've been doing this dance for too long, so they wouldn't be about that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, they probably initially talked about that, and they made some allusions to that and some nods to that in the early stages of the show, but to some extent, like, you know, it's sort of like when you get into a relationship or a show, I feel like fans are, and the viewers of the show or critics of the show, we have a relationship with the show. We have a relationship with Olit too, and so to that extent, it's shorthand. You know, we no longer have to talk about the sort of the racial, and we talk about it because we can't help but talk about it. But when you watch the show, that's not what we're talking about. You know what I mean? Like, when people, the thing that, this is what I mean in terms of that. When he said, "Let me earn you," there were brothers on Facebook and on Twitter going, "That dude has game." Like, there was no, "This white man has game. This white president has game. This white man with brown hair who's 53. You know, like, there was no mention of that. "Dude has game" was all I saw, a bunch of tweets and a bunch of Facebook posts. So to me, that's when you somehow, some way, even if only for, you know, 45 minutes every Thursday, surpass that talk. It doesn't mean it doesn't come back to that, because we are always going to be thinking about that, because that's what we talk about and that's what we think about. Because we are black and we are an American. This is their country and we sort of made our own way. But at the same time, we don't have to think about it all the time. And we don't have to think about that when we watch that show. Now, after we turn the show off and we talk to our friends, they go, "Yeah, that is crazy." But you don't have to think about that necessarily in that moment, because all you see is two human beings relating to each other and him saying something to her that made sense and resonated with her when he said, "Let me earn you." So that's, to me, when that surpassed the whole racial conversation in that moment and all people were talking about how much game he had, that was a moment where you're like, okay, this show has this. There's more to this show than what people want to admit or than people realize on the surface, at least. Fans get it. Viewers get it. People who watch the show regularly get it. But people who maybe are not as familiar with the show have to take notice of that in that moment, because it's amazing. That doesn't happen on other shows. It doesn't happen on television. It doesn't happen in movies.
Right.
Where people
right.
just for 45 minutes stop thinking, okay, he's white, she's black. No, it's a
right.
woman and she's a woman and he's a man. And they have
right.
it for each other. And whatever that is, nobody can deny it, not even his wife. So what's next? You know what I mean? Like that
right.
is amazing. That's amazing acting. That's amazing casting. That's amazing chemistry. So.
Well, and
well,
in that
me,
moment, you think about Olivia and Fitz being together. You don't even question, like, could he drag her in the White House? Could he bring his, after
right.
he leaves his wife, could he bring, like,
right.
you go, that's the way it is. When we know full well, if a white president left his white wife, who just gave birth to a white baby, to bring some black woman in the White House, America
right.
would implode. It would be the
yeah.
day World War III would start. A new civil, I mean, it would just implode. But when you're watching that show, because it is the Scandalverse, because they handle race with such depth, because they don't deal with it and it's not always out there in your face, you just go, hell yeah, they love each other, they belong together. And yeah, Melly, just get your stuff, I got your U-Haul pack. Get the step in. And you don't even question it. When in reality.
Right, and that's right, but that's not the reality, but that doesn't matter. That's, and
right,
that's
because
fun.
There
and
you
me,
know it's true. You know that it
yeah.
would happen and it would be fine.
Right, I mean, because here's the thing. When we watch any of these shows, it's about the suspended disbelief, right? You just,
right.
You suspend your disbelief and you put it on hold, just put it on ice for however long. And the thing that's so funny, people will always point to scandalizing, you know, the steady and suspended disbelief. But come on, you look at a show like Homeland, you look at any of the shows, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, Dexter before the finale, not the finale. All these shows, it's all suspended disbelief. Every show like that, there are always moments where you're like, okay, in real life, this is what happened, but on this show, this is what happened. But, I mean, I think, like I said, once you get into a show and you love the characters and you love the storylines, even when it disappoints you or even if you wanted it to go a different way, that doesn't mean you're going to stop watching it. And it also doesn't mean that you don't get it. Like, it fits within that world. Even that Rowan is her father, you're like, that's crazy, but it makes sense. You know what I mean? It's just like that's how scandal works, and
right.
that's okay because mm-hmm. it's that show. It's that show where you suspend your disbelief and you understand. Like I said, it's a shorthand between the fans and Shonda and Carrie and all the people on the show, and they just get it. It makes sense. Even something as crazy as Rowan being her father. Or like you said, or the president leaving his wife for a black woman. And everybody going, yeah, that could happen. Yeah, no, it couldn't. But on that show, it could. And that's awesome.
Well, let's talk about season 3 predictions. And I want to ask this to the co-hosts as well. I created the hashtag Harrison needs a hookup on Twitter. Because
well, doesn't he?
I'm so disappointed that he hasn't
waiting.
Had his hookup. Yeah, he hasn't had his hookup. So I'll start with Ashley and then LaTanya. What's in store for Harrison this season, do you think? And what do you predict his backstory will be?
I'm not entirely sure. I read Lovie's blog when she does recaps for Scandal, awesomelylovie.com, and she's made some interesting predictions. I won't, you know, I guess I could say them because they're fairly public. She, you know, predicts Harrison being Olivia's brother. I'm not 100% sold on that prediction, but I can kind of see how that might play out on the
I
show.
Actually read the same exact thing, and I was going to say that. I could see how that
mm-hmm.
plays out as well.
Yeah, so I think it's been interesting because when I've seen women flirt with him, he's been kind of timid about it. So
mm-hmm.
I think that there's, I don't know, he doesn't seem like, you know, active dater. He's not, you know, the quote player type. So maybe
at
I'm
least
thinking
a cousin, maybe.
Yeah, there's probably more to that, and probably maybe he's hurt. You know, maybe he's going through something where he's not particularly interested in dating right now, and maybe we'll see why and how that kind of plays into the whole Scandalverse, though.
Well, I said that in a recap several months ago, that are they going to turn out to be half-brother, half-sister or something, and that's why there is no he's so protective of her.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that we've never been able to see of a brother protective of a black woman in a show in a very, very long time. You know, it's that he's very,
yeah.
very protective of her, and
yeah.
there has to be something to it. What I'm hoping is it doesn't necessarily mean that they're relatives because he's protective of her. I'm hoping that then this opens the door for black women and black men to be friends. That would be great, even
right,
if they weren't
yeah.
relatives.
A platonic relationship. Yeah.
Right.
You don't see that.
Yeah, no, you don't see that sort of dynamic. You know, it's hardly ever shown. So, Harrison needs a girlfriend, and I don't need it to be Abby. Not that I'm hating or anything, but Abby is just so mean. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, who can they bring Tatiana Ali on there and have her be some sort of super spy who's got some dirt up her sleeve or who's all about him or something? You know, I constantly cast Scandal, not that anybody asked me to, but, you know.
Do you think there's
something between him and Quinn at some point, or no, not really?
You know,
I think something between Quinn and Huck is going to happen because they are like buddies now. Yeah.
Harrison from the beginning has been he's always liked Quinn, and I think in one of my favorite moments of season two is when Quinn shut Abby down. I was hooting and hollering on my bed. I was like, yes, thank you. And he just had this look on his face. He was just like drinking his drink and just, you know, just loving it. And then at the end he was like, I'm Quinn, bitch. And I was like, I was done. That was it. And so with him and Quinn, I think it's just more of a, like, he likes her. There's something about her that he likes. And I think he's protective of her to a certain extent as well. Not as much as Olivia, obviously, but definitely he has that kind of brother protective mentality with her.
No, I think that Quinn is totally like Huck's. Like, they look at each other and it's like, you complete me. You know, pass me the drill. Let's kill people. You complete, like, you're the one I've been waiting to kill people with.
He looks nervous. He looks scared. Like, what have I created? This woman is crazy.
No, he looks like he's turned on. Like,
she's looking at him like, you complete me. But I think he was looking at her like, I've created a monster. You're crazy. You're crazy.
No, and I think I like it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people on there was a scuttlebutt about Harrison being the one that snitched on Olivia though to the press.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting to see if that plays out.
It'll be interesting to see who ratted it out. I still think Fitz may have done it his damn self.
No.
Just
no,
because.
I don't think. I mean, Tony Goldwyn gave some interview like a month ago and was like, "You're going to be surprised who it is because none of us could believe it." That doesn't mean that it's not fit, but I just think that when he put it like that, I was like, "Well, who does that lead? It has to be Harrison." But I mean, I could be wrong.
Well, it would be good if it was Harrison because I kept thinking that they were going to make Harrison the mole because they had done so little with him. You know,
right?
It would be
interesting
to see why. And then if it came out, oh, well, you're the brother, but apparently they say it's going to be wrapped up in the first few minutes of the show. Like, that part is going to...
Who ratted him out? Yeah, who ratted him
out? So, yeah, that should be interesting. I have no predictions because I'm always... Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. I'm like an idiot savant with it. And when I'm very right, I'm very right, and I frighten myself. And when I'm very wrong, I'm very wrong.
Cool, man. We got some folks on Twitter making some comments about feedback, so we do apologize for the background noise, guys. We'll be mindful of that. Someone was like, it sounds like someone's opening a bag of chips.
Guess what? I was opening a bag of chips feeding my children. Thank you. Welcome to motherhood.
So season three predictions. Moving right along. Do you guys think
when I get my nanny, you never have to hear this again?
There you go. Do you guys think that Huck will find happiness this season?
I hope so. I mean, I wonder what they're going to do with, because he does have I guess that wouldn't be his wife anymore. His ex-wife, I'm presuming that she thinks he's dead or filed for divorce or he's been legally listed as dead or something like that. I mean, it's going to be interesting what happens with the wife. And I love that actress who was on Fringe. I don't really can't remember her real name, but the one who played it. Yeah. She was great, and it'd be interesting to see what happens with that family because they've shown him, and he looks at the clock at that time every day and knows that that's when his kid heads off to school. That has to have some significance in season three in terms of his storyline, I mean, because that is who he is, and that's part of him, too. So, yeah, in terms of him finding happiness, that has to be a part of it. I mean, that's what he defines, at least, as happiness, and understandably, because it was something that he lost. So, if he can get back with them or somehow connect to them or at least to his son in some way, I mean, that'll be, I think, gratifying for a lot of Huck fans because it's just so sad because, you know, that he lost all of that and is sort of a shell of himself because of that. And even if he snapped out of it, he can never really snap out of it, right? So, yeah, I think in terms of finding happiness, that has to come back to his – that would have to come back to the wife and kid.
Now, Lisa Kudrow, you bring her up. She is going to appear on season 3 as a politician. They've kept it pretty tight with revealing anything more than that. Any fun guesses as to whom she will play? There's been some interesting feedback on the internet about that she may be Reston's next running mate. She could be Verna's daughter, maybe a long-lost ex of Rosen's. What do you guys think? What do you predict?
Well, I like the Reston theory that she would be running with Reston. That would be pretty cool. Or Verna's daughter, wouldn't that be fun if she pops up and, like, goes to fits and goes, I know you killed my mama.
Right.
So, I don't I have no idea.
Or someone, you know, Olivia helped in the past and will, or has to help again.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the fun of the show is sort of the cases and people, the clients he has to help fix or clean up for. So, Lisa Kudrow is you know, very as awesome as a comedic actress, but she can do serious very well, too. So it'll be cool to see her in that universe, too. And to see, I hope it is that she has something that has to be cleaned up, though, because it'll be cool to see if she, like, kills somebody or does something crazy. And how that works out. So, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Let's talk about the fandom with Scandal and social media and how the two sort of intertwine. Why do you guys think that Scandal fans are a little bit crazy? A little upset?
You mean the ones with chip bags and stuff like that? Or you, oh.
Oh, the chip bags, like they know that it's chip bags, the fact that they know, and I wonder if they know what kind of chips they are. I'm packing my house up right now. I deal with a lot of the fans, and I don't think that all fans are crazy. I think that we could all get a bad rap because there are some very, very vocal fans who I think it's a microcosm for real life. You know, you've got happy people, you've got negative people, you've got exuberant people, and then you've got more even-keel people. I think that what you see on Twitter is a lot of very vocal people. And sometimes that being upset about the show or direction that a character takes or something that happens, you see people just kind of flame up and feed off of one another. It's the same as in real life. But I think that they're very, very, very passionate about the show. And I think that that's a good thing. I try not to be too crazy. I try to keep my crazy kind of contained, and I don't let it wander free too often, and I try to, like, keep it to myself. But, yeah, we can get a little bit. Hey, what are you opening there? Is that a bag of candy corn? What are you eating?
That was cotton candy.
See? Cotton candy. See, Scandal fans get deep.
Don't tweet Jamie about it.
Gladiators get deep. They can find anything. I often say that if these girls in the fandom was, like, if they would combine their forces, they could find every terrorist cell that there is. They have found every single of Tony Goldwyn ever posted on the internet. They pull stuff out that he took 20 years ago in, like, Denmark. They can find. Yes, it's a little bit obsessive. I think that's fan comes from the word fanatic. So do what you want with that.
True.
Yeah, and to be fair, this is a carbon copy of literally any television show with a cult following. There's that level of fanaticism is so pervasive. I've experienced it myself. So the fact that Scandal fans are over the top, you know, so to speak, that does not surprise me at all. I just think in the age of Twitter, you see it a little bit more, especially if you were an active engager on Twitter. You know, when we were teenagers, it was message boards on the internet, and so. But now it's much more interactive now.
I'm always amazed, and maybe this is just my age or me just being Southern. I mean, I'm probably old enough to be most of your mothers. I'm 45 and I've got, you know, small children, but and then I'm from the South. I'm amazed at people who have their faces and their own pictures, part of the, you know, their names out there, and then they say the things that they say to people about the show, like, and I'm always like, do you understand how huge a digital footprint is? Like the fact that people can't.
Right.
That they, you know, that, and that's the double-edged part of it. The good part about it is you connect to people all across the world. You know, I've built a global community, and I have, you know, friends that I talk to now all over the world, which is amazing, and I wouldn't trade anything for it. And I'm able to communicate with the cast and with the crew, and I have this I have a really good time, and it's really amazing. But at the same time, I'm always a bit taken aback as, you know, an old lady, like thinking, but it's just a TV show, because I know it's just a TV show. It is a movement, and there are people on certain platforms that call us a cult, the Scandal fans. They call us a cult. But I'm always amazed at people who go really deep and really hard and get in the paint, as people say, about being upset about the show or some, and will go off on people and have their real names out there, and like their whole professional reputation could be damaged. And as a businesswoman, I'm always sitting there going, okay, but when the show ends and then somebody has a screenshot of what you've said and done, and you can't deny this sort of stuff, like, why do people go so hard? So I'm amazed and constantly taken aback. But this is my first fandom kind of experience, and I never need to experience it again in my life, like ever. And it explains to me why I was never a joiner, and I'm very much an extrovert, and I'm like the life of the party. That, and Twitter's one of those places where you see this rise of introverts and this rise of people who really don't. It's really interesting. A lot of the people I talk to, like, if I talk to them privately, I'll say, hey, are you the life of the party? Are you? And most of them go, oh, no, I'm a wallflower. And I'm always amazed at that, because some of the most vocal people on here are the people that I could walk up to and go, I heard you say it, and they would crumble.
Right. I mean, the thing that, like, when the whole thing, the Scott Foley thing last Sunday.
Oh, Lord.
I was just like, what's happening? I was so confused as to why people were attacking him. And I think that's what Jimmy means in terms of, like, the crazy fan. Like, the, you know, like you said, the word fan comes from fanatic. But the stuff that they were tweeting him was just really weird. And it was so vitriolic to the extent, like, but you understand he was being funny, right? And I know sometimes that's the problem with social media or email or anything that's, like, electronic communication or humor.
It
doesn't always translate.
Tone.
Right, tone and humor don't always translate, but it's just like, dude, let it go. Like, people were coming at him, ham, and I was just like, what is
happening?
What's
so funny is, of all the cast members, Josh Molina throws shade, honey, better than any black woman on this. Josh Molina goes off on people on a damn daily basis, and nobody steps to him. I think that with Scott Foley, there is this sense of, with a lot of the fans, that he approaches them wrong, or he interacts with them wrong. I don't even know
what
happened.
He's a sarcastic guy,
well,
though, but I think that's
yeah,
that got lost.
Well, someone tweeted that a lot of the anti-Jake fans were the ones that was tweeting all this vitriol to him.
Probably.
Because there's
a
lot of Jake haters out there, and they were the ones that were like, no, whatever tweets that they were sending to Scott Foley. But you're right, like, Twitter and sarcasm does not mix.
No.
If you're
going
to try to go,
like, oh, my God.
We need a
sarcastic. Yeah, you've got to make sure to put a little disclaimer on being sarcastic, because people automatically have this knee-jerk reaction that's usually negative when you say stuff like that. But yeah, I heard it was, like, a lot of anti-Jake fans that tweeted to him that night.
Yeah, it's
crazy.
It's an interesting kind of dynamic to watch, and it's interesting to watch how they interact. And again, that's part of the problem, and part of the good part. You know, you're exposed, and you can talk to the actors, but then, you know, you have to kind of be able to deal with what they send back. Now, I have no idea what happened. All I woke up to this morning was all this stuff about last night, and I was like, oh my God, what happened now? And I've gotten to the point now where I don't even chase it down. Like, I don't even want to know. You know, it's like if somebody's fighting with people and all that stuff, I used to try to, like, get in and go, oh, kumbaya, let's save the world, and, you know, whatever. Now I'm like, whatever, y'all want, you know, the people that just want to be upset over stuff no matter what, and there's really nothing that can be done about that. I mean, there is this sense among some fans that, and it's the same fans, which is ironic to me as a as an African-American woman. These are the same fans who try to divest Shonda from her power in the show and get really upset about her running the show and stuff.
What?
And I'm always like, yeah, it's an interesting
really?
Dynamic. Yeah, yeah. There's a whole group that thinks that she...
They don't want her to run the show.
Yeah, she's being replaced in a conspiracy theory that ABC is replacing her at any moment with some white man that's on the show.
What?
Yeah, it's interesting. I just try to avoid it at all costs because hell, it ain't paying my bills. It's not buying insulin for my diabetic child. It's not taking care of my husband. So I'm like, I can't 24/7 with this. I'm amazed that people spend as much time as they do talking about the show. But if you look at the grand scheme of things, there are so on Twitter, it seems like a lot of us, but in the grand scheme of things, there are 8 to 10 million people that watch the show. If you go to any mainstream media site when they report about Scandal and they talk about Jake, 9 times out of 10, people in the mainstream that watch the show don't even blink about Scott Foley or Jake. They love him being there. Shonda Rhimes loved him being there. We are in such a minority, and because Twitter has been this platform that kind of built up the social buzz of the show, people assume kind of falsely, I think, that they have the power to shut the show down if it doesn't go the way that they want. No showrunner on the planet has ever really listened to fans, and when they do, it's at their own peril. So I just don't think, I don't think any of this is happening. And we're such a small group of people compared to the people that run the show. I was surprised when BET picked up Scandal that the vast majority of BET viewers, and I can't remember what the numbers were, but you can find the press release online, said that the larger majority of BET viewers had never watched Scandal. Scandal's viewership among blacks is high among blacks, but in total of people who watch Scandal, something like 16% of the people. So if all black people fell off the planet tomorrow and stopped watching Scandal would still be fine.
Wow.
It's a very interesting dynamic, and when you start looking at the numbers and really just kind of crunching what's going on, you know, it's apples and oranges. And if people would be constructive and, like, address their concerns, as long as they do it positively and effectively and, you know, go to the right people, then something, you know, they may get some sort of elevation of what the problem is. I've never personally had any problem with Scott Foley.
I mean, to the extent, like, I was waiting for someone to tweet to Scott Foley, you were kidding, right? Like, there was no, it was just either, like, leave him alone, he was kidding, or I hate you and I hope your character dies. Like, what is happening? What is going on?
I like Foley. I don't like Jake at all. I don't want Jake to be around there at all because I want my Olivia and Fitz.
I like Jake and I like Scott Foley. I think Jake is good. It's good to have shake up a show and be. Scott Foley always plays that guy.
He's that dude
that comes in and is like, "How much do you love your man? Really, really?
Yeah,
like,
really,
I mean, there's always a dude
man?
Like that in our." Ask any woman on this podcast right now, there's always a dude that's going to be like, really? You really love your man, do you? That's that dude. That's who he is. That's Jake. And that's sort of like the Scott Foley mold. That's the role he's got really comfortable. And he's paid a lot of bills with that, playing that role. Playing the role of the guy who comes in and makes you question whether or not you love your man. That's what he does.
Well, you know what I get? I get so tickled with the fans when they start going off about him. And I'm sitting there like, and you know what's going to happen tomorrow? He's going to get up and collect a check. And guess what? In one week,
right.
He earns more than the average teacher makes in an entire year. Scott Foley ain't worried about you.
Exactly. He's fine.
Like, keep it moving. Go and find something else to be upset about and leave that one alone. Because Shonda Rhimes loves him. And if Shonda loves him, he's there.
Right.
Leslie
Jessica
Mack
Nicole,
on Twitter.
That was the actress' name with it, Nika.
Leslie Mack on Twitter says people have not liked Scott Foley since Felicity, and he broke up with Jennifer Garner. That's true. People still associate Scott Foley with Noel. question. With vitriol and Twitter and just getting backlash from fans, have any of you, and this is to everybody, including our co-hosts, have any of you gotten any bitter criticism from people on Twitter for your love?
Oh, hell
for
yeah.
Yeah?
I haven't, because I watched both seasons when the second season was, like, well over. So this is my first season where I'm going to be, like, live tweeting and involved. That's coming up.
Get ready.
Yeah, get ready. Be careful what you tweet.
It's rough out there.
It's hard out there for a pimp.
It really is.
I've gotten, I'm in a really different kind of, I'm in this crazy spot where I am a fan and an extreme super fan. And if you hear that feedback in the background, that's a 6-year-old now. I'm also a performer. So part of what I do when I do my recaps is a performance, right? So when people see it, I'm a fan, and then I do this thing. And so people kind of get confused, like, is she really, like, who is she? So I got a huge just wallop in the face when Tony Goldwyn made a video about me being a fan, and I was part of the Scandal Obsessed promo. Me and four other people had videos made by members of the cast, and they were posted on the website and on YouTube, and we showed up in a commercial on one of the shows. Oh my gosh, you would have thought that I had gone to somebody's house, taken their ATM card, licked it, and put it in my own personal bank account. You know, so I've had to deal with that, but I just try to deal with it, you know, keep going with, because, I mean, I'm trying to build something. I'm trying to build, a business and a life, and I'm finally to the point where after 13 years of working, I'm getting noticed, and I'm this close to having all my dreams come true, and I'm not going to let somebody else's kind of crazy jealousy, bitterness, whatever.
So, but wait, what happened? What did they do?
Oh, my God. The post that they wrote and, you know.
What?
It got real ugly.
Just because you were on a commercial?
Yeah, that I had nothing to do with and that I didn't pick. I didn't ask for. It kind of happened to me.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah. Oh, please, honey, they've gone in on my kids. At one point, it was
what?
So funny. It gets real serious. At one point, I don't think that they knew kind of who I was and what my life was like. And they were making these comments about me being a quote-unquote, you know, another one of those asexual things. And then I was, like, put out. Here's the pictures of the husband, the former bodybuilder, and here are my two Mocha Choco Mulatto half-white children, so go ahead, suck on that, you know. And it was like, what? And so then that quietly calmed down. Yeah, there was this whole thing, but I will say this. Overwhelmingly, the people that I deal with are the funny people, the happy people, the insightful people. And there's only a handful of people that do that sort of stuff, but it has happened to me. But 90% of the time, when something good happens for me, I share it with the people in the fan community. And I don't, like, sit back and go, it's because I'm so great and all this is happening. It's like whenever something happens for me, I share it with them, because I wouldn't have gotten where I am, period, if those Scandal fans hadn't been out there sharing my videos and, you know, retweeting me and right there with me the whole way. So 95% of the people I deal with are happy and positive and cool, and they love to have fun, and they watch the show for the fun of it, and they're not into that negativity life. And you can just tell the people who are and just move on. But, yeah, it has gotten vicious, and I had to, like, kind of take a step back, but truth be told, what sustains me is the fact that this whole community that, you know, I'm building with these people who are helping me, who believe in my dream just as much as I believe in myself. There's nothing more refreshing than to get an email from somebody who says, you know, I gave up on myself, but you keep going, or somebody who says, you inspire me to do this. So that's what I get most of the time. Most of the time I get people who lift me up, because I try to lift people up. I try to be funny, and I try to do a motivational quote every day, and I try to keep people in this space that if this could happen to me, and I'm in the middle of nowhere, I'm in the middle of Oklahoma. I mean, I'm in the armpit of the country. I mean, I'm like smack dab in the middle
the
of
armpit.
Nowhere. Yeah, there's nowhere, no diss, Oklahoma, but really. But there's no reason logically why any of this stuff should be happening to me. It's not like I'm in an entertainment hotbed and I have these connections. All this stuff started happening because people liked what I was doing, and they appreciated it, and they retweeted, and they kept going. So the people that I'm that follow me and that I follow and that I deal with are overwhelmingly funny and insightful, and, you know, I have a great time with them. They crack me up, you know, the, some of the tweets that I get, because I do lots of funny stuff for them, and they send me funny pictures, and, you know, they keep me going, and they make me want to get up, you know, and keep going and not give up, because I have so many people saying, you got it, you're almost there, and that is so amazing to me.
Good for you. Sorry about those fans, though. That's crazy.
Yeah, it'll be all right. It's the same ones all the time. It's all, you can always believe it's always the same ones, but that's not what it – that's not where it is. Where it is where you see black women from all around this country who are supportive of me, who say, you inspire me. That, to me, does it. That, for me, just makes everything – it makes it all good and all worth it when they say that, and I just keep going, because one day I am going to make it, and when I do make it, there are going to be doors that I can open for people, and I don't forget things like that, because I'm from that each one teach one generation and that each one teach one place, and I believe in that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Good for you, Tangela.
Yeah. Yeah. So glad to be a member of Blurred Twitter, because Blurred Twitter is very supportive, you know.
Yes.
We're just a solid community.
Yeah, I don't get that
kind of vitriol and hate
me either
from Twitter followers and users in Blurred Twitter. So, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
It's sad to hear that kind of feedback that you get from fans. But I want to go ahead and end the show with asking everybody this very important, serious question. Team Fitz, Team Jake, or Team Harrison? Which one?
I'm Team Fitz. Done.
I'm Team Fitz, too.
I'm Team Fitz.
Fitz, too.
Oh, God. Fitz for the win.
Yeah, did y'all start that hashtag Team Harrison without a shirt?
Oh gosh, who started that? Oh my goodness, and I tweet with her all the time. I'm so Kaya, she started that.
I saw that
shirtless
today, and I about fell off my chair. I thought that was the funniest thing I had ever seen.
Yeah,
I love
Team
that.
Harrison, yeah, that's awesome.
Yes, love it.
That's awesome.
I'm up. I can look at some of that, honey.
Well, Tangela, Makisha, thank you for being on the show. Just to wrap it up, is there any final thoughts, any shout outs that you want to give before we end the show?
Carrie was robbed. She should have won.
She ignored that. Star
that
fight number two. The wounds are healing now.
We're trying to move on.
I know.
Yeah,
she'll win the Golden Globe. She'll win a Golden Globe. But I,
oh, absolutely. You know what? She's had such a phenomenal year. I mean, it's just been amazing what she's been able to accomplish, period. And I think that it's a great lesson in not waiting for outside validation. It's in doing mm-hmm. what you were put here to do and keeping mm-hmm. it moving no matter what mm-hmm. anybody else, whether they validate you or not. When you do your thing, the universe starts moving things out of the way, and you don't need an award to, like, prove that you are doing, because Carrie inspires me so much, award or no award. So I think it's a lesson in validating yourself.
I like that. Good point.
That's the way I look at it. Although I was really like ready to rush the stage and snatch that award out of me. But I don't want nobody to think I'm crazy.
Well, thank you to Tangela and Makisha, our great guests on tonight's podcast. Thank you to our wonderful co-hosts, Ashley and LaTanya. And Thursday is the night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tune in to Scandal. I'll be live tweeting. I think all of us will be live tweeting. Is that correct?
Pretty much.
I won't be. Yes, I will be.
But I'm on the West Coast, so I can't really live.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
ABC.
And if... I'm so
studio,
sorry.
Like, hey,
West
let
Coast
me in.
Coast.
I want a live tweet.
And if you are on the West Coast and you follow Black Girl Nerds, please mute the hashtag so that way there's no spoilers, because I do live tweet it every Thursday night.
I just get off. I was like, I can't do Twitter.
The Thank you so much for having
thanks,
me.
Thanks, Jamie. That
I'm
was
so,
fun. Thank you.
I'm so excited
thank
to be a part
you,
of the blurred community.
Yes, yes. And next
yes,
week, guys,
awesome.
We're going to have Rosetta Thurman. She's the owner and founder of Happy Black Woman.
Happy Black Woman.
She will discuss positive and affirming website about self-care, relationships, entrepreneurship, lifestyle, and travel. So, yeah, tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll have Rosetta on the show. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
thank
this.
You.
This was a good one.
Thank you.
Thank
can't
you,
wait
guys.
For a scandal on Thursday, guys.
Finally,
take care.
Finally.